The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the seventh episode of the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Yes, the name that just rolls off the tongue. And join me, we are actually on location at Dundas and Ossington at a wine bar called Paris Paris with Jay Onright. Jay from SportsCenter, thank you so much for doing this.
Matt, it's amazing, and thank you for coming to my neighborhood.
Yeah.
Well, this is the best kind of podcast where you come to me in a bar I want to go to that I can walk to. You made the effort, and we're both benefiting. Isn't this a beautiful space?
It really is. And I'm just going to give them some plugs. 12 to 4, all the wine is half off.
Yes.
And that changed what I was going to order.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
Because I was thinking, it's lunch, and like wine is the one thing I spend too much money on.
Right.
Like, I don't blink at the $150 bottle at dinner. But then I will ration my toothpaste. Because I'm like, oh, that's a waste. There's still enough for three more brushes.
Right, right.
But, which is totally stupid. But the wine is the one. But then when I saw half off.
It's an incredible deal.
Yeah.
And they're truly trying to, from what I understand, establish like a place where you literally could come hang out all day, drink wine all day. And then they also serve dinner at night. They have a private dining room in the back. And what I love about this place, like a lot of these places along Dundas, so we're basically right at Dundas and Ossington. If you're wondering where it is, we're on the south side of Dundas, just west of Ossington. And it's an old garage, you know, like a lot of these places were. And so they've been able to put these beautiful big windows that let in all this natural light. And Paris, Paris. They wanted it to be like a Parisian wine bar, a place that you just hang out all day. You dream about in Paris, right? Where you hang around all day and you order some ridiculous, beautiful French wine and you eat some cheese and you just hang out with that beautiful woman you met at the hostel.
At the hostel. I'm 43. It's been a while since I've been to a hostel.
I'm 44.
Yeah. My girlfriend still wants to do hostels. I'm like, listen, I'm done with it. And she's like, oh, no, we can get a private room. Like, I don't care.
No, you're way past it. And I was past
it. I'd feel like a narc if I was there.
I was 22 years old when I backpacked through Europe. And 2 months, not even 2 months, 2 weeks in, I gave up on hostels of a 12-week trip where I clearly should have been in hostels, shared rooms the whole time. And I just couldn't do it after a while. I couldn't sleep with strangers no matter how little money I had. I'd rather sleep on the street, I think.
Oh, yeah. And there's a lot to get to. And by the way, for anyone who doesn't know, because with the wine podcast, I'm getting people that, like, if you listen to last week's Jules Garten, Advanced Sommelier, Tom Eddy's coming up, who is one of my favorite Napa producers. But it's not just about wine people, because the title with Interesting People is people that are just wine enthusiasts, people who like wine. And Jay Onright, for people who don't know, him and Dan O'Toole, these guys are some of the stars of SportsCenter on TSN. They've been doing it for ages. They went down to Fox. They kicked ass there. Unfortunately, Fox was confused about how they didn't, you know, tie ESPN in the ratings after 3 years, because, you know, that's all it would take after someone that's been around since the mid-80s. And now they're back here, and the show is hilarious. And the thing I love about what TSN is doing is they give you both options. If you just want an hour of the highlights, great. There's the other SportsCenter. If you want a lot of the highlights, but then a different version of sports, you come to what you guys do, and it's great.
Yeah, when we came back, we had a lot of different options of what we could have done for TSN. They offered us all sorts of different time slots and formats. What we liked about the Fox experience is we got to do a little bit of a chat show toward the end. It was essentially like the Daily Show for sports toward the end. We weren't doing much highlights at all. And we enjoyed that, but we missed the highlights. But when we came back, we realized we also liked that chat element. So we wanted to combine the two. So the show is a kind of a combination chat show, highlight show. And it's probably the show we should have been doing down at Fox the whole time. It's a shame we kind of didn't figure it out down there. It's such a treat. And we have such a great crew. And we're in the old Off the Record studio. They they built us our own studio in there where you used to work. And so we kind of have our own separate studio because God bless everyone in that newsroom, that SportsCenter newsroom. There's no natural light there. Whatever Paris Paris is bringing in terms of natural light, it's the opposite in the poor SportsCenter newsroom. They're slowly dying down
it's
there.
It's the same thing at TSN Radio, where I think you guys do your podcast.
Yes, that's right.
There's no windows.
No.
And when you do morning radio, you would show up in the dark and you have no idea what's going on in the outside world until you, you know, peered out outside.
That's right. Yeah. That's so, right. Yeah. Also, you're in Scarborough. Yeah. All due respect to Scarborough, but it's Scarborough.
Yeah. 100%. So
should we take a sip of this beautiful wine that you picked?
Yeah. What we're drinking. Cheers.
Cheers, my friend. It's great to see you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's lovely.
So what
that's
we're drinking.
Nice.
The gentleman who brings it in, a guy, and who responsible for the wine, a guy named Pierce Predom, who I want to get on this podcast. It's a Canadian, and the company that does it, it's a Canadian-based company. And what we're drinking is Pinot Noir from Willamette Valley. And I believe it is, yeah, it's a single vineyard. And the reason you can tell is it has the name of the vineyard on it. And a little tip. If the name of the vineyard is on the bottle of wine, it's going to be more expensive.
Right.
Because it means all the grapes come from one specific vineyard. I know that sounds pretty Captain Obvious.
And when you think of the Willamette Valley, you think of Pinot Noirs almost, right?
Like almost entirely.
So many Pinots coming from that part of the of North America.
And how they describe, like, Oregon, I always like this. And again, it's a generalization in wine, like in a lot of things.
Right, sure.
Generalizations can only be taken so far. But they're sort of the in-between Pinot. You've got Burgundy, which is much lighter, more earthy, not as fruit-forward. Then you've got Napa and Sonoma, much bigger, more rounder, more alcohol, more fruit. And in the middle, sort of the, you know, the porridge is just right, is Willamette Valley. Not saying that they're the best. The style, exactly. Yeah, so they're the one in between. So yeah, that's
this is a nice one. This is good, and I love to hear about Canadians kicking butt in the States. You know, speaking of kicking butt, like I love to hear those kinds of stories. How he, you know, I can't wait to hear that podcast. How he ended up down there from here. You know, the whole process of it fascinates me.
Yeah. Pierce Predom, it's two people. Will Predom is the second part. He used to be the Somm at Canoe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, and they're just like, they're bringing in so much great wine to Canada. And so when I saw on the list, and we're going to have, it's lunchtime. Lunchtime red is not a heavy red.
That's right.
It's
a lighter. Pinot's a good red for lunch,
I
think.
Yeah. Exactly.
I like how we're justifying our alcohol consumption already. It's beautiful.
Listen, if we were in France, you know.
Oh, it's nothing.
But that's one of the things. In Canada, you know, there still is a bit of a, you know, stink eye when it comes to alcohol in terms of when you're having a glass. Like, ordering a bottle for lunch, people get shocked by it. But you actually save money, and you get a wider variety of wines you can try.
That's right.
And, you know, as long as you're not the school bus driver, what's the problem?
I am so glad you brought this up, because this is one of the main things I wanted to discuss with you. Because for me, I don't drink at lunch that much, because I have a three-year-old now. But every night, my wife and I... My wife's pregnant now, so she's not allowed to drink. But
as much.
Actually, you know what's funny? It's the second child, and so she's definitely indulged a bit more.
Yeah.
Because I think that's obviously a little overwrought, the whole concept of not being able to have anything.
Yeah, well, it's because... And again, as you know, I'm in sports media, so I know a lot about the medical community, is that the doctors are always going to... They're going to overcompensate.
Yes.
Because if they say, oh, you can have a drink. Oh, no, people are then going to have a bottle.
Right, right.
But let's face it. Our parents' generation...
Oh, God.
They all... They're
smoking. Drinking.
Smoking. You know how I know my mom still drank when she had me and my twin brother, Josh? The Pinot Grigio industry did not go out of business in 1975. Because if she had stopped drinking...
Right.
The market share would have plummeted and would start a chain reaction. And suddenly Northeast Italy would have been out of wine.
Well, and it's funny... So, you know, my wife will drink a little bit, very, very limited amount, just a taste.
Yeah.
But usually for us, and that's why I'm glad you brought up this concept of consumption of wine in this country. So we drink two glasses of wine a night with every meal. And I drink those before I go to work. Now, I drink them, and then I have a couple of hours before I have to leave for work. So I always say, and I think I've heard this once, and I don't know if it's true, one drink per hour, you're still good to drive. That's always been my concept. So I'm talking like a 6-ounce glass of wine. I'm not talking like a big 9-ounce pour here.
Yeah, you don't keg size it.
That's right. No keg size glasses of wine. But a normal glass of wine, that's the concept for me.
Yeah.
And I find that I miss wine when I don't have it with my meals.
Yeah.
And I mean at home, out, wherever it is, I've got to have wine. And maybe it's my French background, I don't know, but it's just what I need.
Oh, yeah.
And I've talked to friends now, and this is what I wanted to bring up with you. I've talked to friends our age, because we're the same age,
yeah,
who can't believe, they think I drink a lot. Like, they think, they're astounded that I drink that much wine every single day.
Yeah.
Right? And that's two glasses of wine a day. Now, that's on the weekend, I drink more, but I don't think that's that much. And again, you bring up Paris, you bring up France. Yeah. That's just a standard issue thing in France, right?
People in the hospitality industry, people like in farmers, people who work with food. I'm not just talking about wine. You know, the bottle of wine at every meal is just a common thing.
Right.
Wine was created, especially so much wine was created to be part of food, you know, that they're meant to be together.
Right.
They both complement, and you can enjoy food more with wine. You can enjoy most wines more when you have with food.
Right.
And yeah, you're right. And like, I love when someone goes, oh, I don't want to have a bottle in my house because, you know, it'll just go bad. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it'll take me forever to drink it. And I'm like, yeah, that's a problem that has never once ever come up in my entire life.
Exactly. I'm just constantly trying to keep the wine fridge, and I do, in full-on douche mode.
Yeah.
We redid our kitchen, and I insisted on a wine fridge because I don't need that much wine in the house. I don't need a cellar full of bottles. But what I like is to have 25 reds and 25 whites chilled perfectly in that fridge. It's the greatest piece of appliance I've ever purchased in
because
my life.
It makes you happy.
So lovely.
You see it there, like, hey, you.
It's so lovely.
It's like, I bought that, you know, that old Bordeaux. I can't wait to open you next
That's
year.
Right.
You
That's
know what
right.
it is? It's like my favorite line in The Simpsons. To the greatest moment of all. Better than the deed, better than memory, the moment of anticipation when Jacques Brunswick, the bowling instructor, was in his hotel and he was getting ready for Marge to come and see him because he thought they were going to have sex. And I live that. I love that. I think the anticipation is better than oftentimes the moment and certainly the memory. And when I know that the wine is there, like, because I have some older wines, I'm like, I can't wait to drink you when I open the cottage. I can't wait to drink you on an anniversary or birthday. And just knowing it's there just kind of makes me happy.
So when you're up at the cottage, for example,
what?
Give me a typical drinking day for the causes.
Okay, well, I'll just do it with me. Because so... You know, on a day where it's like, all right, we got no responsibility.
Yes.
It's going to be, you're going to start with, I'm going to probably start with like a really acidic white.
Right.
So like a New World Riesling can be completely dry. People are shocked by that. Or some sort of Sauvignon Blanc, something like that. Then as the day goes on, then we're going to get into the Chardonnay. And my guilty pleasure, I like oaked California.
Okay.
Oaked California Chard. That's my guilty pleasure.
Bit of a polarizing wine for
absolutely.
A lot of people, right?
Now listen, I love my Montrachet. I love Burgundy. If I could sit and drink Chasson Montrachet every day, I would. But I don't have that kind of money. So then it gets to the Chardonnay.
Okay.
Then you're going to get into the red. Again, we're going to start light. Either a Beaujolais or Old World Pinot. And then, depending on what the meal is, that's going to be the full. That's going to be your big red.
Right.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's that's really, you know,
that's where it goes through the course of the day. When you're going up, do you have a certain number of bottles that you must bring up with you?
Well, this shouldn't shock you, and it's a small one, but I do have a small wine fridge in my bedroom at the cottage.
Right,
but it's only like a 20-bottle.
Right,
it's only a 20-bottle thing, and then like I'll load that up with more whites than reds. I'll have a lot more rosé up there, especially.
Right. Yeah, rosé is nice at a cottage.
Yeah, and there won't be as many heavy reds.
Okay,
You know, especially when it gets warmer out.
Yeah,
you know, I'll dial that back a little bit. That's more for when you first open the cottage and closer to Thanksgiving. So that's
what that is. First world problems.
Oh, it really is. And the last 5 minutes have been brought to you by Douchebag. Let's talk about you for a second. Just your own relationship with wine.
Yeah.
Of course, we already now have a good idea about it. But where did it get started? Did you have a bottle, a moment, or was it not even one specific moment? Was there a time in your life when you suddenly realized, yeah, I like this, and I really want to learn a little bit more about wine?
Yeah, growing. So my parents now are hugely into wine, and they also, you know, have a couple of glasses every night, maybe a few glasses every night, and they're just into it. Now the whole family is kind of similar in the sense that we are, and this is going to sound sad to your true. Is it Wenophiles?
Onophiles.
Onophiles?
Onophiles.
I never knew how to pronounce that.
I'm probably mispronouncing. You've heard me on the
radio.
So
Onophiles, you know, Onophiles will be so frustrated, but I am still truly the guy who buys wine by the price on the bottle.
Yeah.
I truly go into the liquor store And as I get older and slightly with slightly more means,
yeah,
I increase my bottle limit. That's, and I always try to push it because I do want to try different stuff. I don't want to be drinking the $8 bottle of wine for the rest of my life. So I push that limit up. So, and my parents are the same way. Now, growing up, we had no wine in the house. We didn't drink wine with dinner. They just didn't do it. They're, you know, we're from a small town, you know, not to generalize too much, but there wasn't a ton of selection at the liquor store for us.
There isn't. And it's not generalizing. That's just, that's basic economics. If there's fewer people, you're not going to have as much wine selection. The biggest wine selections are in mass concentrations of population when there is certainly higher levels of income earners.
Exactly. Yeah. And so we didn't drink it a lot growing up. Then when I got married to my first wife, I credit her with many things, teaching me about furniture, teaching me about music of the 80s that I'd overlooked, like bands like The Cure.
Yep.
And teaching me about wine, a little bit about wine. So she really loved wine. And that's really when I started to drink it a bit more, started to embrace it a bit more, and started to realize, hey, this is something that I truly enjoy. And I'm at the age now where I can feel like I can kind of enjoy it, because you know how it is, you're in college, the concept of busting out, you know, that bottle of Norm Hardy Pinot at a college party seems very strange.
Yeah
seems like you're just trying a little too hard. So as you get a little older, I think, and as I did, I started to embrace wine a little bit more, and like I said, I give my first wife credit for that, and that's when I really started to like it. And I think the other thing with wine, and this is gonna sound weird,
yeah,
I just feel better drinking wine than I do other spirits, other alcohols, beer, spirits, stuff like that. At the end of the day, I feel better drinking that. My body feels better. My body just likes wine more than other things.
Yeah.
Other things just don't sit with me as well. So that's part of it. For you know, that's really part of it. That's like a day like this. If you and I could sit here for 6 hours, which I wish we could,
that'd make for a great sports
center
tonight.
Wouldn't that be fun? Yeah, wouldn't that be fun?
Just you yelling about Joel Quenneville drunk in the camera.
Exactly. I could sit here and drink wine all day and feel great. Whereas if it was beer, I'd feel, you know,
bloated.
I love beer, but I'd feel bloated and I'd have to get up and pee every 3 seconds and interrupt this podcast. So,
oh no, we just take it to the bathroom.
We just take all the equipment. That's right. We bring it all in there.
Yeah. So feel bad for the other person in the urinal, but there you go.
No, so for me, this is the thing I've chosen as my drink now.
Yeah.
And my only shame, my true shame, and one of the reasons I love talking to you is I'm not good at learning things on my own. I'm not good at saying, I might be into something like wine, but I'm not going to jump on a blog and start to learn a little bit about it, even if I know it's going to be to my benefit. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I'm with someone like yourself who does know about wine, I love learning little tidbits and getting little, you know, not just recommendations, but just small little things about the label itself and, you know, single producer, and that's why it's a little more expensive. I love that. I love learning that stuff from someone like you. So, so that's why I'm going to be a religious listener to this podcast.
Nice. Well, I'll say a couple things there. First, about buying by the price. That's most people.
Yeah.
And by the way, even on a files, you know, on a budget, it's just they know, like I can tell you right now, people will call me a wine snob because I'll talk about how I don't like most Australian red.
Right.
And by the way, here's a good douchebag line. And I've used this. I didn't mean to, and
the
I did.
The Wolf Blasses of the world.
Hey, listen, if you like Wolf Blass, that's awesome. If it makes you happy, great. But I once said, unless it's Tasmanian Pinot, I don't care for much Australian red. Such a pretentious line. I mean, even for me, that was a pretentious line. But I have wines that I like that are $8. I did a Muskoka, because I do wine events, I did a Muskoka wine event, and I introduced them to a wine that was $8.80. And they loved it.
Yeah.
You know, I had some others that were more expensive, but you've got to have what I like to call your weekday wine.
That's right.
You know, and then, so buying by price, it makes complete sense, as long as you have a little bit of information, and you know certain things. Like, okay. And for people that are newer to wine that are listening to this, Napa Cabernet, that's a brand. That's an expensive brand. So if you've got a Napa Cab that is $15, it's probably not the best made wine, and it's not going to be from a great area. Not because they didn't try hard or there wasn't good winemakers, but just the real estate.
Right.
You know, the average price per vine, like the vineyard price, is so expensive. And Cabernet Sauvignon is an expensive grape. It's just probably not going to be that good.
Right.
So if you can find one that's 19 to 25 that you really like, grab onto it, you know, like you're on the Titanic, like Leonardo DiCaprio, and you're, you know, freezing. You know, go with that. That would be my first thing.
Okay. By the way, we just got some fries delivered to us.
Fries are coming in here.
They look lovely too.
So, you know, and also, I think all human beings, most human beings, like to get altered. I'm not talking.
I agree.
I'm not talking smash drunk.
Yep.
You know, tripping balls. None of that. You know, just a slightly bit altered.
Take the edge off.
Take the edge off.
Yes.
And we all have our thing. Like, you know, I always was amazed when you see in the movies when usually the businessman comes home, pours some scotch, has a sip. I would do the same thing now at 43. I'd be like, oh, burns. Like, it's sad. But wine is my thing. Some people, you know, marijuana or a cigarette or a drink or, I mean, hell, for some people, just when you work out in that endorphin rush.
Yep.
There, I mean, that's your own, I mean, it's a healthier one, but everyone likes to get altered. And you and I are the same way. It's usually about wine. Wine is always going to be my first choice.
Yep.
Every time I'm at a restaurant, the first thing I do is I look at the wine list, like without fail. So
when you, that's the other, probably the most intimidating thing for someone who wants to get into wine is the actual wine list itself,
the
right?
Especially a big place when you get the Gandalf wizard user magic book.
That's like, right.
It's so huge.
You got to blow the dust off the top of it.
Here's my tip for you. Especially if it's a good place, a place like here at Paris, where they really love wine. Just give them an idea of what you like. And they'll try.
Thank you.
Also, don't be afraid to say what sort of price range you want.
Yes.
You know, don't go, you know, and be ashamed if you only want to spend $50 on a bottle or $30, whatever.
Yeah.
It's the job of the somm. That's the biggest thing what a somm is there to do.
That's right.
Is to pair your needs with what they have on the wine list.
Right.
And a good somm and a restaurant with a good list should be able, if you say, you know, I drink a lot of California Merlot, I have $58 to spend. They should be able to find something for you.
That helps the somm, right? Somm's like, okay, I can narrow this now into a much more agreeable way.
Yeah.
Now, come join me with some of these fries.
I wasn't even looking at the fries like being passive-aggressively like I wanted one. I was actually checking to see where your wine glass was. It's over there. I would hate for it to be too low. You're fine.
So I love what you just said. Part of me wants to know more about wine.
Yeah.
But when it comes to a restaurant, I'm always amazed that people are intimidated by a sommelier because the whole concept of the sommelier is to help you. They're helping you.
Serve you. Now they're there also. They want, like, their first rule. They want to make money for the restaurant.
Of course, of course.
But a good somm isn't going to over upcharge you too much.
That's right.
You know,
usually a somm will give you, if you say, okay, I want to spend $70.
Yeah.
They'll give you a range of wines between $60 and $85.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
So they'll push the 85 ones, but they'll have those 60s on there, and clearly they're fine recommending them to you. So there's nothing wrong with going with one of those.
Yeah.
But what I'm always amazed by when it comes to, and here comes Matt's delicious chicken.
Thank you. That looks great.
This is lovely.
By the way, we're going to be giving some shout-outs to Paris.
Yeah, we're giving a lot of shout-outs to your place. She doesn't care.
No.
She didn't care about the shout-outs.
I thought that would be more.
This is probably the 7th podcast recorded here today.
Actually, the recording one over there, we're going to have to fight them like it's Anchorman.
That's right. We'll go out onto Dundas and we'll fight. Yeah. That happens here every day. But what I was going to say is, I actually love the concept, Matt, of the sommelier, because they're going to enhance your dining experience immensely, because they know the list like you don't, as they should.
Yeah, that's
it's their job.
Yeah.
And they're going to steer you into something that perhaps you wouldn't have tried or wouldn't have known to try. It's an intimidating thing, as you said, those massive, you know, Gryffindor giant wine lists. Even a small wine list is intimidating if you really don't know anything about the labels.
Yeah.
So to have a somm there who will guide you into something, I think it's one of the most wonderful things about dining out these days is how many more places employ a sommelier.
Yeah, and it's key. And like the problem is, like, especially with old world wine, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. Like, if you get Burgundy, you need to know that that's going to be Pinot or Chardonnay. But you also, you know, like anywhere in France, if you see, all you have to do is see where it is geographically, and you need to know what the wine is.
Right.
It won't tell you on the label. So if you see Sancerre, you don't know that that is Sauvignon Blanc. Just like Polyfousse versus Polyfumé, one is Chardonnay, one is Sauvignon Blanc. So that's why you need the Somme there to you know, to help you out. It's always key.
What led you to decide to take a sommelier course and really get into it?
I'm a firm believer, and this is one of my only profound sort of like statements, like my own slogans, is that if you like everything, you love nothing. So once I started to get into wine, I really got into it hard. And I talked about it on the first podcast. Let's just say it was an old bottle of Barolo where my hair stood up when I took a sip. And I actually started laughing because it was so good. And then I'm like, I need to learn about this. And then so it's like, okay, other things in my life, you're going to have to be start to be pushed to the side.
Right.
And that's where it just sort of came from. My stepdad, huge into wine. My dad as well to a certain extent. But, you know, my stepdad, huge cellar. So it really started from there. And then you get into it and you learn, and then you want to learn more and more. And just, it was something that immediately clicked with me in my late 20s. When I was in university, I knew nothing about wine.
Right.
I thought Merlot meant Italian wine.
Right. I mean, right, right.
Just a dummy line, you know, just
right.
An absolute dummy thing by me. All right, let's talk about wine bars for a second. By the way, at any point, if you want to take a bite of your food.
I'm doing it.
Yeah. But I mean, like, French fries are easy. You got a cheeseburger.
Yes.
That is a commitment.
Like, I did commit to it. It looks quite good.
It does.
And it appears to have mustard on the side of it. As if to say, I know this mustard might be a little much for you.
Yeah.
I'm going to make some room for you here.
Yeah. Bring that table over. I hope it doesn't get too crowded. I hate being the people that, you know, I don't want to be man-spreading all over Paris.
That would be a great title of a book, Men Spreading All Over Paris, the Matt Cause Story.
Sounds a little bit dirty, actually. Man spreading just sounds dirty.
Yeah, it does sound dirty, doesn't it?
It really does. So first I want to talk about, because both of us enjoy wine bars.
Yes.
I hate when a place calls himself a wine bar, but they have 5 reds, 5 whites by the glass at most. Sometimes it's only 4, and they never change it.
Yes.
It's like you can go back 8 months later, and it's the exact same wines.
Yeah.
That is one of my biggest wine bar pet peeves.
Yeah. I think the concept of the wine bar is something that you just hear about it on paper, and you think, that sounds amazing. You know, if you're into wine, you're like, that's where I want to hang out every day now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in my 40s.
Yeah.
I like wine. Yeah. I like the idea of going to a place that I know has a reliable list of great bottles.
Yep.
I can spend the entire day there if I want to. And that's the whole thing with this place is, you know, they want it to be a place where you can come during the day and you can work if you want to. You can meet a friend. You can have lunch. Or you can stick around and have dinner later at night.
I mean,
that's to have this kind of place in our neighborhood, we're very fortunate, I think. But I still think it's a kind of a foreign concept in North America.
Well, if you're just any places that say wine bar, it's like, you're not. Don't call yourself that. Just because you have one rosé and, you know, you have a Sauvignon Blanc that isn't from New Zealand,
right. Please
do not call yourself a wine bar.
Right.
I find it infuriating. Like, to me, the best wine bars are this, where they change their Bible class program all the time.
Right.
And it's a great way to learn about wine. You know, you can go back 3-4 months later and learn. Like, I was in Ottawa and, you know, actually went to, I was there for 23 hours and I still managed to hit 4 wine bars.
Wow.
And yeah, I mean, we started early, ended late.
So how were they? Like, were they good?
They're great.
Yeah.
Like, and these are places I researched and I, you know, checked out Twitter, but all of them were thoughtful and just had a great list.
Right.
And that for me is my first big thing. Don't call yourself a wine bar and don't actually be one. That's my first one. The second pet peeve I have is when they serve the wine too warm, especially red wine. There's nothing worse when you're at a restaurant and you can see that the sun is shining right on the bottles. Like, you're destroying your inventory. It's utterly infuriating. And then when they pour you a glass or they bring you the bottle and it's too warm, I was just, when in doubt, have it a little bit too chill. I can always grab the glass. I can warm it with my hand by holding up to the bowl. I don't need to, you know, always be on the stem.
Well, just a little thing, our server here.
Yeah.
Brought us a nice chill bucket for our Pinot,
which
is a nice, thoughtful thing to do. She, you know, you can tell they know what they're doing here, right?
Yeah.
They kind of know what they're doing. By the way, I bit into the burger.
I know.
Delicious.
Is it? Okay.
Okay, they've got it down.
My next question for you I'm going to ask, and then I'm going to take a bite of my chicken.
Okay, yeah.
So,
I can wax poetic for a while.
It's your job. And I'm going to go to sports now. And for people that are not in sports, a couple weeks ago, because this is going to be released about a week from now, there was a great moment in the CFL where an offensive lineman for the Ottawa Red Blacks, his team scored a touchdown, and he had set up with his wife to have a beer ready.
That's
and he ran over, chugged back Mill Street Organic, crushed the can, and it was huge. Like,
it was
Sports
awesome.
Center in the States ran it. It got millions of hits. And were you amazed by just how much that celebration, just how much it took off in terms of all over North America?
Not at all. There was so many. It ticked all the boxes of sports. It was John Gott is a giant, massive lineman with a giant beard. He's like, when you think of Canadian football player.
That's good chicken, by the way.
Right? They've got it down.
Yeah.
When you think of Canadian football player around the world, globally, he's probably the poster child.
Yeah.
Long lumberjack beard.
Yeah.
And just very Canadian. And so he goes and does this. And as you said, he sets it up with his wife, who's stunning, by the way. And she's got the Mill Street there. You knew that CFL Commissioner Randy Ambrosi, who I'm a huge fan of.
Yeah, so am I.
You knew that deep down he was like, that was fantastic.
Yeah.
I now have to be the bad guy and put the kibosh on this forever. And it kills me to have to do this.
Yep.
Because where's the line, I guess, from his perspective? And are we going to be liable for this or that? I don't know. We have sponsors who are not Labatt.
Yeah.
Maybe they're Molson Coors. Whatever. Whatever the reason he has to shut it down. I absolutely loved it. And I knew it was going to become big on both sides of the border. That's just the kind of thing that Americans expect from us.
Yeah.
From the CFL,
beard
right?
Beard-chugging bearded fella.
That a bearded fella playing in the Canadian Football League would chug a beer. It just makes sense. Mm-hmm. I know are a huge fan of the CFL, as am I.
Yep.
And we're maybe, unfortunately, having a hard time getting the next generation to be as enthused about the sport as we are.
Yeah.
Not so much in other parts of the country, but here in Toronto where we live.
Oh, yeah, it's hard.
It's very difficult.
I don't even try anymore. If you're into it, great. If not, I'm not going to. It's like trying to convince someone that's only going to drink Pinot Grigio, try German Riesling.
Right.
And they're like, ooh, gross, sweet. And you're like,
right.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah. No, I'm kind of gotten to the same way, Matt, where yeah. I don't know what the tipping point was for me. I think I went to a game last year when we first got back here.
Yeah.
And it was a Rider game. It was the Rough Riders were in town. And there was 8,000 people at a 24,000 seat stadium.
I know.
And I remember thinking, wow, even 10 years ago, we would have at least had more Rider fans show up to this game.
Yeah.
And what was really unfortunate was that it's such a beautiful spot for the CFL down there at BMO.
I've said it many times. BMO Field, especially when a game starts, you know, late in the day and goes into the evening, you can see, every seat is good. You've got the sunset. You've got waterfront view. You got lake view. You've got the buildings. It everything is there. It like BMO is a gorgeous place to watch football, but. And they're trying. They're doing everything they can. I think
everything.
The hardest job in sports, you know, hardest job in sports is being the season ticket guy, sales guy for the Argonauts. You know,
it's true.
And they do everything that they can. It's a shame it's not more popular.
I really believe the tipping point.
Chicken now.
Oh yeah, go for it. I think Matt and I can successfully recommend the food here at Paris, and the wine.
I think we should get our meal for free.
And by the way, this place is kind of filled up now.
Yeah.
So nice to see they're doing well.
Yeah.
That's the other thing I feel, Matt. I don't know if it's because my parents owned a small business, but when I moved to a neighborhood, I immediately experienced deep, deep guilt about all the small businesses in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
I would need them to all succeed. I worry about the families or the people who've started them.
It's so true. Okay, perfect example. I was walking home yesterday. I didn't even feel like a coffee. I'm not even much of a coffee drinker. And there's a little coffee shop, and it's run by people in my condo. And, you know, it's your local little coffee. And I still stopped.
You got to do it.
Stopped, grabbed a coffee.
Right.
You know? Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you root for the places. There's nothing worse than when your favorite restaurants go to business. And so many times it's because the people in the people that own the building, they raise the rent. And
right.
Now they're screwed. But...
That happens, by the way, all the time in downtown Toronto, this rent-raising thing. I've never understood it.
It's the worst. Yonge Street's horrible. And here's the worst thing. I shouldn't expect the podcast to go there, but we'll go there for a moment. There's nothing worse than when all the local places go down and they're always replaced with the same thing. There's the bank. and there's the shoppers. There's always a drugstore. Mm-hmm. There's a bank. There's a drugstore. And, you know, some other just ubiquitous, you know. Like, I remember when a great burger joint, Johnny's.
Mm. Yeah.
And now it's like Pizza Nova or something there. It's, you know, some
Johnny's up at Shepherd and Vic Park.
Sorry, Dangerous Dan's right at Broadview.
Broadview and Queen.
Yeah. And it's now like a Pizza Nova.
It is?
Yeah. And it's nothing against Pizza Nova, but it just doesn't feel the same.
That's not right. Because Dangerous Dan's was a...
Yeah.
You felt like it was a unique and interesting part of the neighborhood, the kind of thing. Put it this way. You have friends coming from out of town.
Yeah.
You're not going to take them to Pizza Nova.
No.
But you might take them to Dangerous Dan's for a burger, because mm-hmm. that's kind of a unique and interesting part of the city. You need more of these types of places, like Paris, Paris. When this first opened, I came here several times the first 2 or 3 weeks,
yeah.
and it was very quiet, and I was immediately worried, because I thought, this place is kind of run by guys who own a couple other great restaurants in the neighborhood. Super Point, which is on Ossington, which I highly recommend.
Yep.
And then Chanticleer, which is kind of on Queen,
yep.
near closer to Dovercourt.
By the way,
what
you can't see is that right now, Jay is pointing.
I'm pointing in directions.
It's a podcast.
I am pointing in directions. I'm sorry. That you're never going to understand.
You're never
going to
see. Listen, TV guy, you don't need a pause.
Just imagine me pointing.
You're pointing west?
But I knew that the pedigree of the kitchen staff was good here, and so I knew it would be okay. But yeah. at first, I was a little bit worried. Going back to the Argos very quickly to wrap that up.
Yeah, yeah.
When they proposed the stadium that should have been where Varsity Stadium is now.
Yep.
So it would have housed the Argos, U of T, York as well.
Yeah.
And then the Canadian Soccer Association would have had their base there. That, to me, was the thing.
It was
that
right
would have
in the
been
heart
the thing.
Of downtown. You could get there right from the subway. So
subway
easy.
Stop, yeah. simple,
yeah.
easy to get to, filled more, right? Used more. When that died, I really worried about the Argos, because I thought, if it was there, if the stadium was there at Varsity in the annex, where the University of Toronto is, for those who aren't from Toronto, I thought at the very least, if the Argos have sold 8,000 tickets for a 25,000 seat capacity game, you could give away tickets to U of T students at the very least.
Yeah.
You could
oh, yeah.
give those tickets away to them, and they could show up en masse and hopefully buy some booze and walk back to their dorms
yeah.
and have a good time.
Yep.
The thing with BMO is you can't do that, right? You yeah. got to make a bit of an effort. Not much.
But
people make too big of a deal out of it. It's not much of an effort.
It's not much, but it is a bit of an effort just driving again.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
All right. It was funny. I was about to go down local driving habits, but you know, I feel I should steer away from that.
Okay.
The other day on SportsCenter, you said you once saw Vince Neil from Motley Crue after a show drinking Pinot Grigio.
And this is how
I was shocked by that.
This is how I feel like it goes for a lot of rock stars down the road. When you think of Vince Neil,
yeah.
I said the reason it came up on our show is someone asked us, if you could be any rock star, who would you be and why?
Yeah, and you picked him.
I picked Vince Neil, but specifically 1984 Vince Neil. So
oh, yeah.
we're talking peak Motley Crue. Motley Crue is maybe one of the biggest bands in the world at the time. It's peak hair metal.
Yeah.
Theater of Pain has come out. Smoke It in the Boys' Room is on the charts, their cover of that song. They are hitting it. They're filling stadiums. And Vince, from what I understood, Vince would finish a concert, come to the backstage area. They'd have groupies lined up, and Vince would get first pick out of
yeah.
all the bandmates,
yeah.
right? Because he was the lead singer. So
it's a different time.
It was a different time.
Yeah.
It was a different time.
It was a very
okay?
different
time. So he would get first pick. He'd take two girls and wander off wherever he was
yeah.
wandering off to.
Yeah,
he was
like Roger Goodell, the draft.
He was having a good life at the time.
Yeah.
Now, when we saw Vince, it was at the 2013 NASCAR Awards.
Oh, no.
We were in Vegas to present at the 2013 NASCAR Awards.
Mm-hmm.
We were at the Wynn, beautiful hotel, obviously,
yep.
at the lobby bar. Vince rolls up with his lady. He looks a little puffier now.
Yep.
He looks, he's older, right? He doesn't look bad, but he's definitely put on some weight. But what fascinated us, and we met him, and he was really, really nice, really gracious guy, but he was drinking Pinot Grigio, and he was
yeah.
going through the Pinot Grigios that they had, so he obviously had a little bit of knowledge,
yep.
and this was his drink. And I thought, wow, where, like, talk about if you could have gone to me, you know, 1984, like 10-year-old me who loved the crew and said, you know, 35 years from now, this crazy guy who's probably just doing mountains of cocaine and drinking Jack Daniels out of the bottle.
Yeah.
In 30 years, we'll be selecting between several different bottles of Pinot Gris at a Wynn hotel bar. I would have been like, no chance Vince does that.
Yeah.
But that's exactly what happens with those rock stars, because I think they think that drinking wine, even if they've struggled with alcohol in the past, that drinking wine somehow is okay.
It's the methadone.
It's kind of the methadone of alcohol.
Yeah.
And so they get to indulge a little bit.
Yeah. You know, Pinot Grigio, lighter alcohol, you know.
And they also, to their credit, let's give them a little bit of credit. I'm not saying Vince Neil's the most sophisticated person in the world.
Yeah.
Maybe he is. I don't know. But he, like all of us, tastes change. You know, he's been around the world. He's traveled. He's been introduced to different things. So, you know, maybe he is, a bit more knowledgeable about that thing than we give him credit for.
I said it a couple weeks ago. For most men, at least I'll just say North American men, you start drinking red, you drink almost no white. You drink mostly New World red, a lot of Australia or California. Then as you get older, you eventually go over to France and Germany and Spain and Italy. You drink less California, and the amount of white you drink goes way up. I don't have to say 50-50, but it's more than, say, 1%. And so the same thing happened to Vince Neil.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the exact same thing. All right. Last thing we'll talk about, and then we'll it's so funny. I have all these other questions here. We're not even going to get to Terry David Mulligan. We'll save that for another.
That's too bad.
Yeah, we'll save that for another podcast, because now that you've done one, I'm going to force you to do another. Ooh, and I'm going to get you to give me your tasty notes on the wine at the very end.
Okay, sounds good.
But I think people that are listening to this who don't know much about sports don't realize how much sports media people love wine.
Oh, yeah.
Also, especially like hockey players. Jim Fox, Igor Larionov, Valerie Bure. Mario Lemieux has one of, if not the greatest Bordeaux collections of any professional athlete in North America. People don't realize, from the players to the media, how much wine is part of it. Dwayne Wade, has his own winery. Drew Bledsoe, former safety for the Cardinals. Terry Hoge. Of course, everyone knows Terry Hoge.
Yeah, Hoge was a good one.
Yeah.
You know what's funny, Matt? You bring up Mario Lemieux.
Yeah.
He was one of the first guys that I remember having a wine cellar. Like one of the first famous guys that I knew of and was aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they might have done a story about it. You know, he built a huge house in Pittsburgh or something. Or maybe it was his house in Quebec. And he was one of the first guys that was like, wow, he has a wine cellar. Like, he's really into wine. And obviously, again, I was younger. I didn't understand why he would be that into wine.
Yeah.
But I'm curious your thoughts about this. Why do you think with hockey players, because it's like most hockey players eventually get pretty into wine, or at least they just like it. They just like it. Do you think it's the fact that they're eating at a steakhouse every night?
Yes. I think it's a steakhouse. Right. I think it's the dinners. I think also there's an ego part of it, because you want to be, especially when you got the money, you want to be the guy ordering, you know, the reserve Camus. That's $585. And most hockey players are very conservative. They are a Napa cab group, you know, much like, say, like Pierre LeBrun is a huge Napa cab guy. And I'm not even saying that as a negative. I'm just saying as a thing. And I think that's part of it. And then, like, the rookie dinners. What's the most expensive thing? You know, oh, order the wine.
Every time.
And I think that's what comes up to it. Like, for instance, you know, for every team that wins whatever championship, on Twitter, there'll be the bill, you know, like,
oh, yeah,
celebrate it. And
oh, yeah.
I remember the Bruins when they won the Stanley Cup, and the bill, you know, was like $84,000, or when the Dallas Mavericks beat the Miami Heat. You know what I would do, because I'm such a nerd? I would go on the bill, and I wouldn't focus on the final. I want to know what people were ordering.
For wines.
For wine. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Or for the champagnes, because, you know, they would do a lot of the champagnes. The Ace of Spades was a big one, obviously. But, yeah, like, I think part of it's a status symbol. Also, you get more money. So then you just get introduced to, quote, unquote, the finer things, even though, again, there's $8 wines that are great out there. So I think it's just a natural thing for guys get money. And as you put it, they're in steak joints a lot.
They're in steak joints. That's 90% of it is the steak joint thing. The fact that they are... Literally, it's actually it's probably not good for them to eat that much red meat when you really think about it. I like Mike Johnson told a funny story on our podcast how when he was like a rookie, he was rooming with Wendell Clark of all people. Like, yeah. Imagine that, right? As a Leafs rookie, he's rooming with Wendell. And every night he said, Wendell, it'd be like 10:30 or 11. And Wendell would be like, all right, kid, we going for steak? Like, what? And like, every night.
It's like when
how's he alive?
It's like when Bart's like, my heart hurts. Butter your bacon.
Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think you're right about that. And then going to sports media where we kind of ply our trade.
Yeah.
You know, the Bob McKenzies of the world are so funny because they've almost made this, we've created this persona around Bob that he's this wine guy, right?
Yeah.
And he's at the cottage in the Kawarthas and he's enjoying big old world reds every night while yeah. watching the sun go down, you yeah, know. No. But it's probably not too far from the truth, right?
It's one of my goals, by the way, in the summer. I want to see eventually if I can get Bob to come on the podcast. And I got a cottage. I want to drive to his cottage and just have a bottle with him, do the podcast sitting on his dock.
How? That's a great idea, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a show.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Just, yeah.
What about a show where Bob is just interviewing people on his dock
yeah.
and you're drinking and you're getting steadily drunker?
Yeah. And you don't have to get drunk. Just one bottle between two people. If you've got some food, at most you'll be a little bit tipsy.
A little buzzed.
Yeah.
A little buzzed.
Wouldn't you like Babcock to be...
See, that's where you want
Dubas.
Babcock.
And, don't you want McKenzie asking Dubas? So tell me about those Nylander and conversations. Here's a little bit more Cabernet in you. All right. We'll end it here.
I can't believe it. It's flown by.
It's like almost 50 minutes.
Wow.
Our food is getting cold. We need to eat. Next time you come on, I want to talk about BC wines.
Yeah.
I went to Okanagan, Kelowna area a couple years ago, and I was shocked with the quality.
Yeah, it's improved, Matt, so much.
Yeah.
The whites were always there. Yeah. You know, not to say they were the best in the world, but certainly the whites were representing well.
Yeah.
But what has changed to me in the last 10 years, because I've been going there, much like you with, you know, the Muskokas and stuff.
Yeah.
For those of us who grew up out west, the Okanagan is sort of the Muskoka of the west. And what has really changed to me is the reds.
Yeah.
The reds in the Okanagan, if I could be so blunt, were pretty awful for a long time. And now are pretty respectable in general.
Canadians get smarter. The vines get older. The knowledge gets bigger. And we've seen the same thing in Ontario. We'll say that for another day. But before we go, quick toast, and let me know what you think.
Absolutely.
Again.
This is
2015
lovely.
From Pierce Prudhomme, Willamette Valley, Oregon. The Highland Vineyard, 100% Pinot Noir, 13.6% alcohol. So for a New World Pinot, under 14%, that's good.
What do you think of it? What are your thoughts on it so far?
What I like about it is restrained. It's not overly extracted. It's not like you're not getting hit over the head with fruit or with oak. You know, you get the dark cherry, bright cherry, some dark raspberry, you know, a little bit of, there's some spice there. I like it's not just dominated just with fruit, that there's more going on than just that, that there is a little depth and complexity. And also, it's drinking better now than when we started.
I was just going to say, it's actually better now than when she first opened the bottle, which I think is probably makes sense with a Pinot.
Yep.
And the thing I noticed, and was something that you said earlier, where you talked about, you know, a Pinot in France versus a Pinot in the Napa Valley versus a Pinot in Oregon. This tastes like an Oregon Pinot. It's almost like a poster child for an Oregon Pinot because it's right down the middle in a way. As you said, it's not too fruit forward. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of right down the middle. It's almost like a perfect starter Pinot. If you were saying to somebody, do you like Pinot? Why don't you try this one?
Yeah.
This one would be a great one to try.
If you want to get someone into it, you don't want to pour them France because that can scare them. And California, some of them can be overly extracted and they don't really understand because that's not what Pinot is supposed to be. But a lovely one. Jay, really
this has been fantastic, my friend.
Cheers, my friend.
Thank you.
So much
for doing it. Cheers.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. And remember to subscribe, iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom. Tell your friends about it. If they're hardcore wine people or just getting into it. And if you didn't like the podcast, well, thanks for clicking on. Every number always helps as well. And as always, everyone, happy hunting.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.